I'm George Herbert. I work for a company called Taos or Taos Mountain up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I will be talking today about training and professional development in our IT community, which is a consulting and a contracting company focused in that geographical area, but with various other people around the country in various places. So studies show the worst thing a presenter can do is say exactly the same thing that they've got up on the slide. So hopefully I will be doing a little less of that as we go on. But there's a little bit of it that creeps in as we get further in because it's, you know, there's only so many ways to display something and talk about it. But I'm aware of that, so hopefully I don't do it too badly. So before we get started, let's talk about why is training and professional development important for us. And there are different answers to this depending on who us is. For you as an individual, I look at it in two ways. One is it helps with your career advancement. You will, you know, be able to do more constructive things in your career and advance further, get paid more, you know, do more interesting things. Another one is that, you know, learning is a challenge, and something that you'll find the further you get into this, teaching is also a challenge. And professional development, you know, does not come without a two-way street. You will eventually be involved in helping to lead stuff, help to educate people, and help to train them and teach them. So that, you know, not everyone is comfortable with that, but if you are, it is very rewarding and very constructive. For employers, professional development and training gives them more capable employees who can accomplish more. You know, it's really necessary for companies to get involved in that to be successful at getting more complex projects done. There's only so much you can hire off the street to get the right person to do something. Once you've hired the right people who can learn things, helping them train you know, giving them incentives to train and develop themselves and support for that will, you know, significantly change the amount of stuff you can get done in your IT organization. So there's also a secondary benefit that if you're doing this consistently, people stick around. There's a fear in many companies that, oh, if I give him, you know, training money or training class or something, then they will take that and then they will run off and get a new job somewhere else rather than, you know, continue to benefit this company with skills that they've just learned. That might be true if you're a sort of a negative company and this is a one-off class, but what we've found is that if you do it consistently, so that people are always saying, okay, well, there was this class, and then next month or next week there's another thing that I'm interested in, and there's a commitment for there being an ongoing program of this sort of stuff, people do stick around a lot better, and they value it and give us good feedback on it. So we believe that if you make it a, you know, value of your organization and you do it consistently, it actually enhances people sticking around rather than driving them away to find better jobs. Let's see. So finally, there's also, you know, what does it do for the industry? So all of us, you know, we're the limiting factor in how fast the field is advancing. It can't go any faster than we can build and design things. It can't go any faster than we can imagine things. I'm getting a little feedback on the audio. Yeah. Okay. All right. So it can't be, you know, things can't change faster than we can change it, you know, we can't invent things faster than, you know, we can actually, you know, all of us come up with them. So the more we train ourselves and, you know, communicate with each other and spend time on, you know, advancing ourselves in the field, the faster the field will be able to evolve. And we've seen some really amazing advances over the last 20 years, over the last 10 years, over the last 5 years. And I think all of us would like to see it keep going and keep getting better at what we're doing. And you know, from our own job perspectives and career perspectives and from what we're doing, you know, within the IT world. So this paper is a practice and experience report. That means that it doesn't have as much data as I would like to have in it. I wanted to have a lot more data, but we had one particular problem that made it very difficult. That problem is illustrated by this, which is probably, very probably, my signature on a sign-up sheet from something that happened about 5 years ago. I was only able to tell that that's probably mine because none of the other ones was mine, and I happened to teach this particular thing, and so by process of elimination, it's almost certainly me. But that made it a little easier to figure out that particular one. You know, multiply by hundreds and hundreds of training events that we've done over, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, much less the last 10 or 15, and people whose names I don't remember all that well and who signed about equivalently that well on the sign-up sheets. That's not the right way to track who's attending what and doing what and how the classes are going. So, you know, as a lesson for you going forwards, is find a better way to track, you know, who's doing what and what the attendance is like than just using sign-up sheets and signatures and stuff. That turned out to be about the wrong way to do it. So we're in the process of attempting to reverse engineer a lot of sheets like this and, you know, get actual data out of, you know, individual person, you know, how they responded to training and what it did to their careers. But it's really a paper for next year once I've had a chance to sit there and pound my head on the sign-up sheets for a while. So I'm going to tell you somewhat of a story as part of how I'm going to do this. This is a practice and experience report as opposed to a, you know, more numerical paper, so hopefully that's okay with you. So we're going to talk about who's in this community that I'm talking about, you know, which is the company that I work for right now. You know, when and what we did for training. We'll talk about, you know, what's next in, you know, the company, what's next in the studying that I'm doing of how our training and professional development has worked. Finally, I'm going to try and encourage all of you to get out and do some of this in your own communities and encourage other people to do it as well. I think it makes a difference in the world that we work in and live in. And I think it's something that all of us can step up to and take a role in. It's really not as hard as people are afraid it is, and it can make a big difference. So let's talk about the community. So the company is Taos Mountain, as I said earlier. It is a consulting and contracting company. It's been in business for over 20 years. It's in the San Francisco area, although it has some branches in other areas. We have about 200 technical people in the company, most of which are in the San Francisco Bay Area, although there are a couple of other geographical locations. There's also support people and other stuff, but we're talking about technical IT people on the order of 150 people in one place. And because we're a consulting and contracting company, they're not all sitting in one place at the same time. They're spread out around the Bay Area, but we have them within reach, so technically we could, you know, look at that as a target audience that we can expect to reach with the training and professional development on a fairly consistent basis. So that's, you know, one thing I want to keep in mind as we go through this is that your communities will look different than my community does, and I want you to be aware of that as well, because some of the ways we did things will not work as well for your communities as they did for us. We'll talk about, you know, strategies and ideas for how you can deal with that and the ways your communities work. You know, I want you to know what it is that, you know, where I was coming from when we did all of this work and then as we were studying it. Talking about the distribution of technical skills, about 40% of the technical people are, you know, Unix Linux admins in the classic sense, you know, including some DevOps role stuff, but you know, people who, you know, on a good year might be expected to come to this conference and click in. There's also a fair number of Windows admins, network admins, storage admins, a few database people, some IT technical IT project managers, a little bit of IT management and other, you know, mixed stuff, some security people, that sort of thing. So it covers sort of the full range of people that you expect to find in IT organizations. That are doing some role or another within, you know, our customer base, it sort of matches what we see in the industry out there around where we work. So it's a pretty good mix. Let's see. So let's talk about what was done and when and in what time periods. So Company's been in existence for over 20 years, and there's really three time periods that matter. Company got the idea for doing a lot of professional development activity and training activity going back fairly early in its existence, and had a model that it stuck with through about 2004. There was sort of a change around the year 2001 when the dot-com bust happened, but it didn't. It changed the rate of, you know, of being able to do stuff. It did not change the nature of it. There was a change in the nature of it around 2004, and again there was another change, in the last few years since the 2008 recession really started to have an impact on things as well, where we've shifted stuff around again a little bit. In some ways, the economic conditions changing promote us thinking about changing things, but only in the last downturn did it actually have an effect that kicked off some of the changes. We'll talk about those in a little bit more detail as we get there. So for the first 15 years, the company was fairly active in professional development. We had two main ways. One was we have professional development reimbursement, where at the time, you had to go buy books. You couldn't get a Safari, subscription or go to the web, really. There wasn't a whole lot of IT how-tos guides on the web at the time. Being able to go buy books and go to little training classes and stuff and have it paid for by the company was a big benefit. Also, we had expert presentations on roughly a monthly basis at company headquarters. So sometimes those were internal experts, but often they were other professionals from the field from around the Bay Area who would come in, give a 2-hour presentation with snacks and drinks and stuff after hours at company headquarters. So it was a social event and a training event, and got some community interactions going with the wider field around the area. There was also some other activities going on, such as peer mentoring, where we would set a more senior person up to work with a more junior person who wanted to learn. We had self-paced training, what we call on the bench or beach between assignments. So you would come in and sit in our internal computer lab and do a self-paced training course that we had prepared while you were waiting to go off to your next assignment. We had escalation support network where if something went wrong at your client site that you couldn't handle, that there was a specified set of people that you could contact and processes for how you could contact other people inside the company to deal with something, which isn't directly professional development, but was sort of a community, professional response, system. So it helped make people more comfortable to take on more challenging roles because they knew if they got in trouble, they had someone to back them up on it. We also had a role that we called staff manager, which was that we established HR people whose role was to go out and relate to the IT staff in the field that were doing the consulting work and be their point of contact to try and keep them connected to the company and keep them aware of professional development and give them a more of a support network that was reaching out to them rather than them having to come to us. So that wasn't so much technical, it encouraged the technical and professional development interactions and activities. So it was important for how, encouraging people to participate. So the results from the early efforts were somewhat mixed. So the big failures were peer mentoring and the self-paced training. The peer mentoring, we found that in the end, about 10% of the times we start a peer mentoring relationship, the person who's receiving the mentoring continues on with it for a useful amount of time. We're not exactly sure why, we're sort of afraid that it's the people we're choosing to do the mentoring from the senior side and be the mentors, we're not exactly sure. So that just never worked out for us very well. Self-paced training worked well with some people, but they're the people who can figure it out on their own anyways. The other people are having more inconsistent results. We also had problems keeping that self-paced training up to date as the field changed. It took a very significant investment on our part to keep it up to date and try and keep it relevant, and turned out to just not be worth it in the end. People weren't getting enough out of it for it to be worth it. The other things that we were doing all were successful, so people were happy with them. They were using them, they were showing up for events, using their professional development reimbursement money, and buying books with it, coming to the expert presentations, and would consistently call us when something went wrong and they needed help, so we would get a more senior consultant in to help them with something and help get stuff done. So part of the overall lesson of this is that try different things and figure out which ones are working and not. But want to talk about the failures as well as the successes. So the middle time period, we were talking about the time up to about 2004. We had most of those ideas, in the early 90s. We had those sort of standardized out and used them through about 2004. So around 2004, we changed it up a little bit to try and make it more efficient and effective. So the first thing we did was we split up the expert presentations into a couple of different ways of doing that. One of them was what we called office hours, which is sort of a 1 to 1.5 hour presentation that we would do once a week instead of once a month. And the goal there was to make it more accessible to people and have it more regular and periodic so that people would have more of a chance to get involved and stay involved in it, rather than, I'll be back in December for the next whatever it is. That worked reasonably effectively. We also had longer training sessions, which were between 2 and 12 weeks, with up to 24 class sessions, those also worked pretty well. It took more preparation on our part, but was effective at as a training course. Lots of people were interested in it, and we've had very good attendance on those. We also started doing annual technical reviews of the staff. So it's like our onboard hiring procedure that we do, where we have a sort of standardized way of trying to understand what somebody's capabilities and skills and strengths and weaknesses are. And we started redoing that every year so that we knew where people were and how they were advancing and could give them advice on their careers on a regular basis. And that clicked. People loved that. They loved to hear how are they doing on that? If they're one of the sort of the go-getters who's really interested in their career, then they were really grooving on it. If they were somewhere in the middle, then they tended to think of it as good advice, and it encouraged them to be more active. The lower-level people, maybe not so much, but there's only so much you can do to get them involved. So after 2008, we had another shift. Everybody got bit by the economy at that point, and consultants wanted more training and professional development, but it was harder to give it to them because the company was being affected by the economic downturn, and we had to trim back some of the stuff we were doing. We didn't want to fundamentally change it, but we couldn't offer as much of it without laying off more people and it was a trade-off that we didn't think was a good one. Temporarily suspended the professional development reimbursements. The utilization rate on those had dropped a little bit anyways, and we thought it was a reasonable trade-off to avoid laying people off. We suspended the longer training classes, but not the one-hour, weekly sort of things. We thought that was a reasonable trade-off. The one-hour weekly things would keep people relatively involved and connected. The longer training courses, continuing to plan them so that we wanted to bring them back as soon as possible, but they were more expensive to run because of the hours involved from the staff side. We also moved further away from the major freeways, which turned out to have a major negative effect. It was only a couple miles, but it meant 10 more minutes of commuting to get there through the local traffic, and that is the one thing that we did that I would take back if I could, because a lot of people stopped coming because they were like, it's another 10 or 15 minutes of driving. I don't want to bother with it. So that was a very subtle thing that turned out to have a major impact and be a problem. We also attempted video distribution of training, and we tried to do it ourselves, and that was a mistake. And we started giving everyone Safari accounts if they wanted them. So rather than have to go buy your own books, they could just go online and grab it temporarily, and that was also very effective. So again, the effects, after we moved headquarters, it was harder to get to. The attendance rate went down statistically, but not, you know, horribly badly. Video distribution didn't work. Should have used WebEx, should have used YouTube. We're going to be doing something like that in the future. Doing it yourself is not a good idea these days. We did not refresh our internal website when the economic downturn hit, and we probably should have. People are having problems finding information, and that's making the community less connected. So that's something we're hoping to work on in the future going forwards. In this year, we found that the one-hour office hours events were not as attractive as they had been in the past. So we're changing to more structured classes where it's more like a 2 to 3 hour event or a couple of times of 2 hour events where there's more structure, more prepared material, more organization associated with it because people want to see a little bit more concrete value out of it rather than we're going to be talking about Puppet for an hour or 2 hours.
So this should be your last slide.
Okay, we're almost there. So there will be some graphs, and I will go through them relatively quickly, and the graphs are in my paper, and I will do a very quick run-through of what's on each graph. So here are the events that we held each quarter.
Why don't you just pick the one you want to say most?
Okay. All right. So that was the number of events. So we were doing about 140 events over the 4 years. This was the number of people attending, the percentage of the company that was attending that trended down in the office hours from about 7% down to about 4%, which is why we changed it up. This is our training classes, and when we canceled training, obviously less people went, but there's an upwards trend in the attendance there from about, the average was about 4%, it's up to about 6% now. That's per training class, percent of the technical consultants showing up for each training class. Professional development spending with about $100 a quarter covers the program, although it goes up and down on a quarterly basis. So these programs are not nearly as expensive as your budget people think they are. You can do quite effective with quite a limited budget. Statistically, about half the consultants showed up at some time or another over the 3.5 years. And the total attendance, the number of people times, that showed up times the events was about seven times the headcount. So people are showing up on the average about once a quarter, but it's distributed, much differently than that average. So 137 events were studied with over 1,100 attendees over that time period. Results and benefits. A lot of people are engaged in, finding this of value. Those people seem to anecdotally stay longer at the company and advance faster in their careers, although we need to do more data analysis on that to be able to support that in detail. They cite professional development and training as a reason to come to the company and to stay with the company, so we believe that it's valuable for retention and for recruiting. And I wish we had better numbers. Like I said, trying to decipher all the signatures is a real pain, and that's not the right way to track it going forwards. So participation, some people are involved, some people aren't. We try and motivate the people in the middle who we think will get benefit out of it, and we find that the more active the training program is, the more motivated they are. Things that work, annual technical reviews, the little office hours and the training courses, all the other stuff as well, all these are value, found to be of value and used by the consultant base actively, and we've dropped off the stuff that wasn't being used actively. And lessons learned, use a better method than the sign-up sheets because you'll never be able to go back and figure out what the actual results were. And people aren't using all of their professional development money. We try and encourage people to come to conferences and to go spend the money and do stuff with it. They don't typically do that, so we're working on that. Future research. I'm going to go back through my previous data and attempt to derive the numbers that I only hinted at anecdotally and see what that meant for performance. Is the best employees, what were they getting out of it, and how much were they getting out of it, what did it really mean for their job career paths. And do stuff, try stuff, experiment stuff, and go out and do it yourself. I've given you some ideas about what we did. you can do this too. We had smart people that were doing this, but they weren't super ultra geniuses or supermen. Everyone in this room is capable of taking some role in your community and starting to do that, whether it's within your company or if you've got a regional, regional LOPSA or Bay Lisa or something like that. You can go out and, create energy, get events going. The more often you do it, the more effective it will be. It doesn't have to be big and complex. You can just have group discussions about a topic, pick a topic, for 2 or 3 weeks a month, and just have, 3 or 4 people who are good at it have sort of a little round table about it, or just have an open discussion about a topic and have some experts in, and do it regularly enough that people will get in the groove of doing it and, continuing to come out and participate in it, and you'll have good results. So that's it, and I did, in fact, run over my time that I intended to. But that wasn't too bad. So, all right, questions?
Let me make an observation before we applaud you. With regards to sign up sheets,
yes.
I found that asking people to put their email address forces them to write legibly. It's absolutely ingrained in people that email addresses need to be legible, regardless of signature. We have time for maybe a couple of questions if there's anything that needs to be asked. Okay, so you have actually come in under the wire. Thanks very much.
Excellent.